everybody. Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast. I'm so excited today to bring you another interview. And this could be a lot of fun, a chance for us to get to know a new actress in the world of Hallmark. We're talking to Haviland Stillwell. And I'm Rachel. And Haviland, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Rachel. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So what we like to do is we like to give our guests an opportunity to introduce yourself and tell us what inspired you to become an actress.
Like you said, I'm Haviland Stillwell, and I have been an actress my whole life. I started when I was a little girl, and it was just always something that kind of came naturally to me. I always loved storytelling, and I loved doing, voices, and kind of when I would tell a story about just what happened at school or something, I kind of acted it out. So it kind of was always natural. And my mom was and is in the entertainment industry. She was in the theater industry and then also got into film and TV when I was, 6 or 7 years old. So again, like it was kind of the norm to me. My dad was a politician. So just that kind of personality is just kind of like in my blood. And I started to see performances, especially on TV and in film, that I just thought, wow, that's really not only what I want to do, but what I feel like I have to do. So it just was, I guess that's, when you feel like, not only like, oh yeah, I guess I could do that, but it's sort of like, no, I have to do that. I have to study that. And that's the way I need to express myself. And I feel like I can contribute to the world. A few of those actors were, I love Bette Midler. She was a real inspiration to me when I was a kid. Everybody from her to, I loved Drew Barrymore, and I loved like people that were, on TV and that kind of thing. So, I think that's just, I think we all have a story to tell and many stories to tell. And it's important to, I think, follow your intuition and your calling, I guess, whatever that may be. And that's what it felt like to me, honestly. So I just sort of went with what felt right.
Mm-hmm. Did you grow up in the U.S. or Canada?
I grew up in the U.S. I'm American. I grew up in Georgia, Savannah, Georgia.
Oh,
and then moved to Atlanta when I was about 11 years old. So I was a Georgia girl.
Yeah, there's a pretty big movie scene there in Atlanta, television.
There is now. Yeah, there is. It's kind of gone through phases, but it's really exploding now. It's, like the norm for everybody to kind of go and work there now. So, so that's been really cool because I often get to, go home and see family and everything when I go to work. So that's been cool.
Mm-hmm. That is cool.
Yeah.
So you grew up then watching a lot of movies and things like that as a kid.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. It was like an escape, I mean, I think we all go, everyone sort of says like, oh, well, what we're doing isn't, we're not saving anyone's lives. And I mean, not to be too serious about, at the end of the day, we're just actors, it's not like we aren't saving people's lives in terms of like physically removing tumors or something like that. But I do think when I think back to like really like sad parts of when I was even a little kid or something, I always think of various performances and TV shows and everything that I would just watch just to feel better and to feel kind of like, oh, I'm not alone, or, just to make me laugh, to kind of get out of a sad mood. Or, I think that is really important. And I think people do turn to entertainment to, either to kind of like feel what they're feeling or to escape a little bit from what they're feeling. So in a way, it does kind of save lives. You know what I mean?
I think so. I think that's very true. I remember Roger Ebert quote where he says the movies are a machine for generating empathy. And I think that's really true. That it gives you a second to be, to walk in somebody else's shoes, to understand what they might be going through. And then also to just, and not only a realistic one, but as an escape to walk in, you know, Frodo's shoes or walk in Harry Potter's shoes or whatever it might. And, you know, it's a different experience than reading a book, because a book you kind of live in, and for, you know, however long it takes you, depending on the book, where for, you know, a movie, it's just a, it's just 2 hour experience. And see, that's one thing I kind of like about film is that you get that, that, that experience of different worlds and different characters, but you, it's not, it's just not as big a commitment as a book or as big a commitment as a television. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, and you're just seeing, you're seeing, I mean, all art is open to interpretation, you know, so you're kind of seeing like that director's interpretation, the different actor's interpretation, the writer's interpretation of, you know, kind of how to tell that particular story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love it. So I love what I do. I feel really lucky.
Yeah, I will. And I think that if we were just a society that was just talking about the survival, you know, the bare essentials, then that's not a society I want to be a part of. Like, you need, I need art, and like, I might not physically actually need it to literally survive, but I can't imagine life without art and music and and all of that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, very true. So if you're a huge Drew Barrymore fan, you must have, you must be a big rom-com fan.
I do like rom-coms. Yeah. I do. I don't know. I mean, she was such a, like, a symbol of childhood of, like, you know, when I was growing up, like, the Guess ads and, like, her, I don't know, just her whole style, like, her 90s girl kind of style and everything. It was just so, kind of, like, she was the ultimate cool girl, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also just, like, so beautiful and so just cool. I mean, just, like, didn't kind of, I guess, ascribe to a lot of the rules that a lot of other young women were kind of trying to force themselves into, like, I've got to be like this or I've got to be like that. She kind of really did what she wanted and overcame a lot of drama and, you know, addiction and all this stuff that, you know, was going on in her childhood. I love rom-coms. Like Never Been Kissed and like Mad Love, which isn't really a comedy. It's kind of more of a drama, but I mean, I love all of, and of course E.T. is like the,
oh my gosh,
definitely amazing. Not really a rom-com, but, and then like, I mean, Charlie's Angels, hello. So good.
I love Ever After with her.
Me too. It's so good.
Angelica Houston is fantastic in that movie. You actually feel kind of bad for her at certain points, which is tough to do with the evil stepmother. And I love how it's like this kind of weird feminist version of the, it's a very academic version of Cinderella. You know, it's like the big romantic gesture as they go and study philosophy in the forest. It's like,
yes,
great.
I love Angelica Houston, and I found myself one night at a party, and I actually played charades with Angelica Houston.
No way.
And we were on the same team, and we won. So just saying, Angelica Houston can kick ass at charades. So just saying.
You'd be able to win like any game of Two Truths and a Lie with that one, I think. Nobody would believe
it. Yeah, right? I know. It was really surreal. Like, talk about surreal. Like, when she rolled up into that party, I was like, okay, cool. Like, so many iconic characters. And yeah. He was super awesome, like completely down to earth and normal and just beautiful and everything.
That is really funny.
But yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate, like I've played a lot of villains like in the voiceover world, and I have played a few in on camera, but that's kind of my favorite to do in a lot of ways, because and I think that she's played lots of villains because I do feel like they have a really interesting story. There's always something, you know, there's a real reason they are, you know, evil, or they're what's considered to be evil or terrible or whatever, because, you know, they've gone through, you know, their own struggles, and, you know, it kind of makes them the way they are. I love that kind of tropey character.
When they announced that they're going to make a new witches movie, a new adaptation of the book, I was like, good luck with that. I mean, Angelica Houston was so iconic, at least for me, as the headmistress of the witch, you know, and that, that I don't know how you top that, but anyway.
She's perfect. She's a perfect, she's just like perfect in everything she does.
So, I noticed that you had done a lot of voice work, which really excites me. I am an animation fan first, and then a Hallmark fan. It's actually my true love is animation. And so it made me really excited because you've done a Barbie series, you've done Monster High, Ever After High, just a ton of different shows that you've done voices for. And so I always like to ask voice actors, you know, what's your process for coming up with a voice?
Well, it depends a little bit on the parameters of the job. Uh-huh. So if it is, you know, a lot of times you'll get a breakdown. So in the break, like when you audition for a role, or when the writer has basically written the series or the role, they'll have kind of usually like a paragraph on what that character, who they are, you know, what their background is. That you may not get just from reading the script, you know, it might have like a little bit of their backstory, or kind of like their MO, like what makes them tick, what's their thing, what's important to them in life. And then sometimes, especially in the casting process, they'll even go so far as to give references, you know, they'll say like, oh, an Emma Stone voice type, or like a Scarlett Johansson type, or, you know, something like that. Which I find helpful, because you kind of know going in, it's such a collaborative process between the writers and the studio that's animating it, and then the actual animators and the voice actors. And we're actually never all in the same room together, you know? So even on any level, from like the lowest level all the way up to like a Pixar feature, you never have the opportunity to kind of all look each other in the eye and say like, okay, let's talk about the concept, or how are we all doing this? I mean, it really requires so much communication between everyone, you know, and kind of also just people really sort of taking a leap and going, I don't know if this is what you guys want, but I'm just going to bring my best, and hopefully you'll tell me if it's, you know, if I'm going off on the wrong path or whatever. What would be a through line for every character I'm you know, figuring out how to voice, is that I really do like what it is in life that really makes them excited, what makes them anxious, what makes them angry, and what are the things that they love and that bring them a lot of joy. So, for instance, with a villain kind of character, you know, the things that are going to bring her joy are often things that we would consider like evil or bad or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's reasons for that. You can't, as an actor, you can't judge, you know, the characters you're playing. You just have to play them as honestly as possible. And hopefully that brings out not only the heart, but also the humor. If it's a comedy and if it's a drama, you know, the emotion and the drama, for lack of a better word. So I think I just kind of go off of instinct first. Like after I read the script, you know, I'll just kind of try out some things, and then I'll go into the recording session, and basically kind of have a few ideas to start. And then usually the first few minutes, and it really is only a few minutes because voiceover happens really fast, you kind of work with the director, and sometimes the writer's there, sometimes they're not, and the sound engineer, and just kind of try out a few things with a few lines and see what sounds best, and kind of what really is getting to like the essence of the character. So, so it really is a collaborative process, but you kind of have to come in with an idea, and then they'll, you know, and then the other people who are in the room sort of direct it. It's honestly not that different from on camera acting as far as that. You know, you come in with what you're coming in with your ideas, and hope that you have, you know, exciting, fun people who are excited to like play in the sandbox, you know, and kind of go from there. Yeah.
How do you, I was just going to ask, how do you do your voice acting auditions? Do you have I've heard some people do it and record in their closets to make good sound.
I have like a little setup at home. So I do that. And also at my voiceover agent's office, they also have a booth there where they have a booth director. So, I do it sometimes there, and I often do it at home as well, just cause you can, you know, roll out a lot of things late at night or early in the morning, or kind of whenever you want to. So it's not technically in my closet. I do have like a little office, and the office is pretty insulated. So, so that's maybe mine. That's really all weird. We're all like weird and in corners and closets and wrapped up in blankets. It's really, voice acting is a weird little niche of people. That's for sure.
Yeah. I love it. I love voice actors. I think it's amazing. I'm terrible at I'm terrible at anything like that, trying to do an imitation or anything like that. And so I don't know. I just admire it. And I think I think animation, in my opinion, is the greatest form of movie making, because it's got everything that other movies have, plus it's actual art. It's literally paintings that are, you know, it's or artwork. And so I just love it so much.
That's
so
really cool.
Yeah, very neat. Okay. So I found online you in this YouTube thing, the Star Wars musical. And so I had to ask you about this. So you played Princess Leia, which must have been crazy. And how did you get involved in this? It's a comedy for people who haven't seen it. It's a little bit, and it was really funny. I really enjoyed it. How did you get involved in all of that?
Thanks. And there's actually a sequel coming out too, ooh, which I'm super excited about. I got involved with it. One of the producers who did all of the music for it, he kind of was like the guy did the concept. He literally put together all the music and, you know, did all of that. He is someone who's hired me for concert work and recording work as a singer. So he knew me from multiple jobs that we had done, and basically said, you know, he's a huge Star Wars fan, and some of his other brilliant creative colleagues wanted to do it, and so, you know, they basically put together their cast of people who they felt, you know, could nail it. So it was so fun playing Princess Leia. I love that character. I love Carrie Fisher, like idolize, worship Carrie Fisher. So that was really amazing. And then the sequel goes into more of, because the first Star Wars musical, as you saw, kind of really just deals with, it deals with episode 4 of Star Wars, but it also kind of gets into like the parody of when Disney had first bought the Star Wars, you know, franchise. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like randomly like, Snow White is in there, and like randomly Cinderella. Like it's funny. I had a great time with that. I feel really lucky to have done so many projects. And it's always interesting in interviews, because it's usually like there's something I'm there to kind of promote or to talk about, or that somebody's excited about. But then there's always something like that someone's like, oh my God, I have to ask you about this thing you did. And you're like, okay, let's do it. Yeah. So yeah, I'm glad you liked it. It's very fun.
It was fun. It kind of had, the music had sort of an Alan Menken sort of style to it, sort of a Renaissance,
yeah,
Disney Renaissance kind of feel to it. they did a good job with that. So I'm looking forward to it. When you said it's this fall, the new one?
I think so. I haven't gotten the exact release date on it, but it is coming out soon. So, and I'll be sure to blast it all over my social media when the time comes.
Okay, great. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
So you had a small role in your first role for Hallmark was a small role in The Beach House. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. The Beach House, with Minka Kelly and Chad Michael Murray and, right. So fun. Yeah. I mean, literally like such, it ended up being like, I think I'm on screen for maybe 3 seconds of the movie. It's so fast.
Right.
You know, you never know when you go in for a job, like what something's going to be. And it was kind of a last minute thing. It was like the day before I got cast in it. So it was, very last minute, but, you know, Hallmark movies are so iconic and they speak to so many, I mean, people just love them. They're such a great fan base that, I love fans. I love like hardcore fans of anything. Cause I just, my favorite kind of people are enthusiastic people. Mm-hmm. So if you're enthusiastic about something that's just like a feel good kind of a thing, like how can everyone not love you? You know, like it's a Hallmark movie. Just everything's positive and happy and it all works out in the end, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like with Hallmark, for the most part, you get the pluses of fandom without a lot of the negatives of, you know, people being kind of toxic and mean and whatever, and gatekeepers and stuff. It can happen in any group. But for the most part, the Hardys and the Hallmarkies are pretty sweet and pretty kind. And
right.
You know, I feel like they kind of know what they like and they know it's kind of silly. And so they just embrace it and have fun with it. And I appreciate that. And because even the Disney fans can get sometimes a little much. I mean, like, calm down. It's just,
I mean, everyone can a little bit, yeah. You know, but yeah, I agree. I mean, my experience with Hallmark fans is that it's usually just, it's people that just, you know what you're getting into, you know, you're not watching like an Oscar nominated film, right? Like it is, it's like, it's fun and it's cute and everyone's going to be like, and there's going to be some drama, but it's going to end up, everything's going to be okay. And like, honestly, that's in the two now that I've done, The Beach House and this one coming up, Love to the Rescue.
Yeah.
They both were like that on set, you know, everybody's positive and happy and, you know, having a good time and knowing like, we're doing a Hallmark movie. This is fun, you know? And that in and of itself is good too, because, you know, all sets can be different and sometimes, you know, they're more stressful than other sets. And my experience on Hallmark has been that it's a very positive group of actors and, you know, everybody's there to just have a good time and make something cute and fun and feel good.
Yeah.
And that's nice.
Yeah. I've never heard anything except for the fact that it is a tight time frame. Other than that, everybody I've talked to has just had such positive experiences, which makes me.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Happy, especially in this age of the, you know, Me Too and everything like that, where people have these horrible experiences. It's nice to see that you know, knock on wood, that so far it seems like it's been pretty positive for the people I've talked with Hallmark. So that makes me happy. And
yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Santa Jaws. So give you some backstory as far as my kind of experience. I made a goal last year that I was going to watch every single Christmas movie that I could.
Wow. And
yes.
That is a really intense goal.
Yeah. And so I ended up watching 85 Christmas movies. And the thing that I know it's insane, but the thing that makes, I think, a goal like this really fun is that it pushes you out of your comfort zone to watch things that you wouldn't normally watch because it's your goal and you want to watch all of them. And I found this, you know, I'm doing my research. We did our preview and I put Santa Jaws on the preview and everybody just about died laughing. And we were like, what is this? You know, what on earth? And so I went into it expecting something like Sharknado, which aren't my favorite, because I feel like,
right.
I feel like the Sharknado movies are trying too hard to be a B movie. And like a good B movie to me has like, people aren't trying to make a B movie in a true B movie, like something like The Room is often cited. Like he was absolutely trying to make a masterpiece, and that's why it's so enjoyable to watch, because it's just
right.
So, and anyway, so that's why I don't really like the Sharknado movies, because I just feel like it's a little too calculated in its
right
goofiness, if that makes sense. And so that's why I was expecting going into watching something named Santa Jaws. You know, it sounds ridiculous. So I turned it on, and I was pleasantly surprised by what I found, because yes, there's definitely parts of it that are ridiculous.
For sure.
I thought it was way more creative than I expected. And I definitely think it's a lot better than Sharknado movies, because I liked the whole idea that he had drawn these comics, and that then, you know, he's angry at his family and everything. And then all of a sudden his creation comes to life, and all of a sudden is the thing haunting people. But that was clever. That was smart. And you know, it's really just, it's kind of a parody of, you know, these kind of suspense movies. And I walked away having actually really enjoyed it and had a good time. And it was refreshing, because I'd seen so many of the Hallmark and Lifetime variety. It was refreshing to have something different that was so different in feel and tone and everything. And I don't know. It was just surprising in every way. And I kind of wanted to talk to you about in the movie, what was kind of the goal of the movie? Was it to make a Sharknado type movie, or was it a goal to, like, what was it like kind of making the movie and the tone kind of on set and everything like that? That makes sense.
So I got the offer to do the movie, and I had not auditioned for it. So I was excited, because it's just lovely not to have to go through that process. But I basically, I got this call, and my agent said, you know, they're doing this movie, and it's a comedy, and it's a Christmas movie. And I was like, oh, okay. And he said, yeah, just take a look. I mean, I didn't even know the name of it. He said, take a look at the script, and, you know, see what you think, and take a read or whatever. So like, oh, okay. You know, so I opened my laptop. I open up the PDF, and it's, the title page says Santa Jaws. And I laughed out loud, legitimately. Yeah. Like, I'm like, you were, oh my God. Okay. I like, pretty much I'm in based off the title alone, but like, let me make sure that it's not like, you know, a terrible character or like something that like, I don't want to do. It's like, you know, I mean, I'll do a lot of things, but it's like, okay, like, is the character, you know, I mean, there's a few things that I definitely won't do. So let me just take a read.
You don't want to do pornography or something.
Well, exactly. I was like, what is this? You know? Right. So I read it, and I just thought it was so funny.
Yeah.
And it had such a, I love Christmas movies, but I really love this one because it's a horror movie, but it's so funny. And like probably my favorite horror movie of all time is probably Scream. I love the Scream franchise because I think it is actually kind of scary, but you laugh when you're like, I remember seeing like Scream like in, you know, with like a big group of people. And I remember us like laughing, like we would scream and then we would all crack up laughing because it was so silly, you know? And it's like, I love that genre. Like I love that genre of film that it's like, no, you're not taking it that seriously. It's not a psychological, I mean, I love psychological thrillers, like love them. But like, you know, it's funny at the end of the day. So I think the tone on set was that we were making a comedy. That being said, everyone in it are great actors. And I think we were all really playing the scenes, you know, within the truth of our characters, but there was definitely an edge of like, okay, we're not doing a drama. This is a comedy. You know, there's a lot of special effects that are, you know, that we had to deal with. Obviously, like, you know, we all had scenes with a shark that wasn't actually there when we were shooting it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're kind of dealing with that too, of like, how do I do a scene? How am I doing this scene? And you really have to work with the director, who is amazing, Misty Talley, who actually was the first female director to direct a film for Sci-Fi, for the Sci-Fi channel. So she's just a total badass and is actually like an expert now at making shark movies, which is hilarious. You know, so the crew was so fun and so great, and everyone kind of had a great sense of humor about, you know, look, like we're taking it seriously to the point of, you know, we're all professionals and we're all trained and we all do this for a living, but also we're making like a silly movie and it's gonna make people laugh. Mm-hmm. So I think that I think that's what kind of works about it. And I think from your assessment, I think you're spot on, and I think you got out of it what we were all hoping everybody would get out of it, which is, you know, it's a silly, fun, feel good movie, and it's supposed to be one that you can watch it with your kids, you can watch it with your nieces and nephews, and, you know, there isn't anything, like you said, pornographic in it. There's nothing like, I mean, even the jokes of like Georgia, my character, I mean, it's legitimately like Christmas Eve and then Christmas Day, and I'm like running around in heels and like short shorts and a bikini top, and it's like, it's Christmas Eve, like, yes, we're in the South, but also come on, like, that's such a trope of horror movies, of like the blonde girl in a bikini. That's like, we just, you know, and I said that to the director, like, and I'm like, you know, I'm all about equal rights, and I'm very much involved in the, you know, the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement, and I want to champion women. So, and she's like, absolutely, we're definitely not gonna make this like an exploitation. We're gonna make this a comment on the fact that they always have this character in a horror movie, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, so there's that kind of like wink, wink at the audience a little bit of like, we're all in on the joke, mm-hmm. you know, like you're not laughing at us because we are the joke. Like it's a joke that everybody's in on. It's like an inside outside joke. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, and they had so much flexibility within the story because it's all coming from a teenage boy's comic, you know,
right?
And so,
which is ridiculous in and of itself, like everyone when they were a teenager is ridiculous, so it's like it's already ridiculous.
Yeah. And but you've got a little tiny bit of heart, I think, in there, because, you know, he's frustrated, and, you know, coming of age stories just always have a teeny bit of heart, you know, in there, and it, with all the laughs and with all the, I just appreciated that when you watch something, I always try to watch something for, did they succeed in doing what they're trying to do? Right. Because right. you could say mm-hmm. that, like, I don't know, some, you could say, oh, well, what about this? How could I give some Oscar bait movie a lower score than something called Santa Jaws, you know, just theoretically. And the thing is that Oscar bait movie is trying to do a particular kind of thing, and maybe I don't think they succeeded at doing what they're trying to do. They, you know, they didn't get the emotion they wanted. They didn't get the whatever. And so technically I think it's a failure, even if it's made better than some other, you know, than a Hallmark movie, because I get tons of flack for that. Like, how can you give, you judge these Hallmark movies, give them a pass when, and then you're so tough on something like First Man, which I didn't really like that much. And I think that First Man wasn't successful in doing what it was trying to do, in my opinion. I think,
right.
You know, whereas like some of these Hallmark movies are successful in doing what they're trying to do. And so I watched this and I was like, you know what, this is a group of people that are really trying to put out the best thing that they can put out when given maybe a pretty tough, pretty weird, you know, kind of thing, and you could just easily phone it in, like you know, so many bad parody movies and so many other things. And so these are people that actually tried to come up with this interesting, with this story of this kid writing, you know, making his comics. And I felt like this was a lot better than I expected it to be, for sure. And I just walked away and enjoyed it. I think you're right. I think it's funny. I think it plays up on some of those tropes of horror movies, shark movies, and even coming of age movies a little bit. And I think it was pretty good. And I hope they do a Santa Jaws 2. I think we need another one next year.
Oh my God, me too.
Yeah.
Me too. So the movie is opening in theaters internationally.
No way.
And yeah, so it's we're all going to be really famous in Japan, evidently. So, but yeah, I mean, this is one of those things that I always feel like, especially now, my God, fans really have so much power now because of social media.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, yeah, back in the day, like people would like write into networks and that sort of thing. But like, because of the immediacy of how responsive people are able to be on various like social platforms, it really does get back to the executives. I mean, people, sci-fi looks at all that, you know, the producers look at all that. So when there's a whole bunch of people saying, you know, we want there to be a sequel, or we want to see more of this actor, what have you, it really does make a huge difference. So, you know, I always just say that, you know, for people listening to this, if you guys are passionate about Santa Jaws 2 becoming a real thing,
that's right.
By all means, tweet at me and tweet at, you know, Josh at Sci-Fi and all of the various people involved with it, and say, you know, you need more.
Yes.
For, you know, Christmas 2019 or whatever.
You have heard it. Heard it here. Let's start a movement. It'll be great. If we could have four Wedding March movies, we should be able to have two Santa Jaws, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, there were like 19 Sharknado movies.
That's right.
So.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your upcoming Hallmark movie. This is our first real introduction to you in the Hallmark world, and we're really excited about Love to the Rescue. And you have Nikki DeLoach, Michael Rady. They're wonderful.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. And they were so fun to work with, like really, really fun people. And they have such great chemistry. And, you know, I think it's going to be, they were really fun to work with and just to watch.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and the director, Stephen Monroe, he's a veteran, Hallmark veteran. He's great. That must've been fun.
Yeah. He's so fun, and he's great. He's super funny. And you know, you have to be really fast to do, like you mentioned before, the tight time frame. And it's true. I mean, it happens that way with so many movies now, just because of budgets getting cut, I guess, and people just trying to like crank things out really fast. But you know, when you only have like 10 or 15 days to make a movie, it's just really intense. I mean, everyone's really, you know, cranking it out, and it really demands everyone to be at the top of their game. Not just actors. I mean, everyone on set. So, so it's always challenging to do short shoots like that, but also you really see what people are made of and just how good people are, because you have to just be so efficient with your time and your talent, you know?
Yeah. I know, it's impressive. They're able to just, I mean, most of the time it's just one or two takes on a lot of these, correct?
Yeah, just, you know, even with, and on this one, because there were so many children in it, and the two of the main characters are kids, you know, there's child labor laws, so they can only work a certain number of hours. So also that requires Stephen and everybody else to be really specific and kind of calculated with their scheduling and how they're doing things, because, you know, when that timeline, you know, when the time limit is up, it's up for the day. The kids got to go home. So, yeah, you're often in sort of a battle with that and a battle with light, you know, when the light's going down and all of that. So, it's always really, like, as an actor, it's always interesting to me to watch, you know, sort of how people combat that and how people, you know, I guess, tackle those issues. But, you know, my experience was very positive. Everyone was great. And I mean, I think it's going to be a really popular movie, particularly with people who really are animal lovers and are, you know, fans of adoption. And I have so many people in my life who are really passionate about that. And I think there really haven't been that many movies where they deal with, like, you know, pet adoption and animal rescues and that kind of thing. So I think it's kind of a nice intersection of you know, a really sweet kind of classic Hallmark type love story, but also with the element of, you know, animal lovers too. So, yeah.
Well, I'm really excited because I got to interview the writer, Sarah Montana, and that'll be coming up on the podcast in a couple of weeks. It'll be the Monday interview before the movie, but she is very impressive, I thought. And I think this is her first project for Hallmark, and I think we can expect very good things from her in the future. And it made me really excited for the movie. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I think so too. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I'm always a fan of a great female writer and, you know, people getting, you know, women getting their voices heard. And, you know, you'd be surprised at how many stories that are about women don't have female writers. So, even though this is about both of them, but, you know, several of the females in the you know, have kind of a little more nuanced storylines. You know, I think often women are sort of, it is a little bit tropish in not a great way about, like, oh, okay, this is the home wrecker role, or this is the, you know, the bitch, or the CEO who's mean to everybody because she's a boss, or, you know. And in this one, there is a little more nuance to all of the females in it, which I think is, I'm sure it's in large part due to the fact that a female wrote it, you know, not that males can't write women. I'm not saying that by any means, but, you know, you can kind of tell. I mean, you've seen a million movies at this point, you know, you can kind of tell sometimes when something's like, I feel like a woman wrote that. Like, that just seems like it's a little more nuanced.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think so, for sure.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we'd like to end our interviews with what we call the Team Beat questions, and they're questions that Amber found in an old issue of Team Beat. And they're just simple questions. So here we go. All right.
Love it.
What is the best ice cream flavor?
Vanilla.
Oh, yeah. You can put anything on it.
It is. Yeah. Classic.
Yep.
Straight up vanilla.
Okay, good. All right. What's your favorite color?
Purple.
Mine too. You're nailing it right
now.
Yay! Yes. Okay. What music are you listening to right now? Are you into?
Oh, I really like Halsey. I'm having a Halsey moment right now. Oh. And also the soundtrack to The Americans, which is mostly 80s music.
Okay.
It's really, I love The Americans. Great series.
Cool. Good.
Yeah.
All right. What is your go-to date night food?
I'm a big fan of popcorn. I also really like don't know. I would, yeah, I'm going to say, I'm just going to go with like straight up popcorn, like have a popcorn night.
Yeah. You got to have the butter and I love a good thing of popcorn.
You put, I mean, however you want it, Rachel, the thing, like,
that's right.
You know, make it to your pleasure.
That's right. All right. What is your go-to date night activity out and about to do?
I love movies and I love roller skating.
Oh.
So roller skating is a fun activity. And I mean, anything on the beach is great. So anything on sand, in the ocean, all of that is thumbs up.
Well, maybe they'll have to tap you if they would do the Xanadu remake.
1,000%. I've been saying it for years. Yeah. 1,000%. I want to do the Xanadu remake. I mean, let's get that trending immediately because I've been literally saying it for years. Like I put it on my Instagram story like about once a month. I'll be like, here I am roller skating again, ready to do Xanadu. Like,
no, it really makes sense because you can sing. You,
it's
not a roller.
It
skate.
Makes total sense.
You have blonde
You're saying
hair.
All the truth. Yeah.
And you look enough like Olivia Newton-John to
Well, thank you.
Play
That's
the role.
I mean, she's a goddess. She's a goddess.
I mean, yeah. Well, let's also make that happen. I would love
to also make that.
Too.
I am 1,000% down, ready to go shoot it right now. Okay. My roller skates live in my car so that I can roller skate at any moment. Yeah. So I'm ready. Yeah. I'm
All
totally
right,
ready.
Good. Let's get to work, Allmarkies. All right. So dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Okay,
I have
good.
Two of them.
Yeah. What kind of dogs do you have?
I have a Maltese and I have a Chihuahua. They're both tiny and white and really cute.
That's
they
awesome.
Each weigh about 4 pounds.
That is really cute. It's like you're what is it in Legally Blonde?
Yeah, I know.
Bowser,
I know.
Bowser? What? Bowser? I think it's Bowser.
Yeah. Mine are named Fanny and Boss. Yeah.
Cute. Oh, I like that, Franny. Okay, beaches or mountains?
Beaches.
Yeah, me too. Would you rather be in a fancy dress or sweats?
Probably sweats, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. So, what is your favorite holiday?
Christmas.
Yeah.
Love Christmas.
It's tough to beat Christmas. It really is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Last question, and you can pick your own. We won't judge. What is your favorite Hallmark movie?
I mean, I'm going to say Love to the Rescue.
Very good.
Even though I haven't seen it, I'm just saying I already feel like it's going to be my favorite.
Yeah. Well, we're really excited for it. It's going to be really good. And so thanks so much for coming on the podcast. It was so much fun to get to know you. And where can people find you online, social media, and all that fun stuff?
You can definitely check out my website, which is havilandstillwell.com, which has links to everything you need. But also Instagram at Haviland, spelled like Haviland is like Disneyland or Dollywood. It's just Haviland. So you can find me Instagram at Haviland. Twitter at Miss Haviland, M-I-S-S Haviland, and Facebook is just my name, Haviland Stillwell. So find me. Let's talk. I love interacting with fans. And like I said, I love enthusiastic people. So talk
Great.
To me.
Well, we'll have all that in the description section. You guys can check that out if you're listening. And if you can follow the podcast, all over social media, Hallmarkies Pod, we really appreciate that. And if you want...
Yes.
If you're listening to the podcast on iTunes, we really appreciate your ratings and reviews. And if you're listening on YouTube, give us a thumbs up and a subscription. We really appreciate that. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all over social media and on iTunes and YouTube. Really appreciate you checking that out. So thanks again. Have all this was a lot of fun and we'll have to talk again, another time.
Yes, let's do it.
All
anytime.
Right. Sounds good. Bye.
All right, thanks, Rachel. Bye.